Warning, Star Trek From the Holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire.
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel, we are energizing transporter beam. Now.
Welcome, everyone, to Star Trek From the Holodeck. I am Michael Flores, your host and captain. And I'm in the studio, or on the bridge. I'm on the bridge with Ensign David. Hello, David.
Hello, everyone.
All right, so today, I'm really excited. We're going to be getting into our discussion here. We're officially going to get into our discussion of one of the greatest iterations of Star Trek that is underrated
and unappreciated.
Unappreciated and all but forgotten amongst the mainstream. And that's Star Trek, the animated series. Yeah, that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to break down every single episode. Not today, that would be impossible. But we're going to set the table. The purpose of this discussion today is just solely dedicated to setting the table and getting our discussions ready. We're not going to get into even the first episode. We're just going to talk and we're going to riff a bit about the animated series so that people that may not be familiar with the animated series can learn a little bit and get themselves ready. Maybe it's been years as well. Maybe there's listeners out there, Dave, that have not watched the animated series in years, decades, perhaps. Well, now's your chance to catch up and watch as we discuss, because we will be going through each episode one by one over this next year. All right, so let's get a little background on this series. Dave, that's the purpose today and our thoughts. It will aid in getting a little more perspective or gaining a little more perspective and might bring a little more context when we get into the discussions of the episodes, okay?
Okay.
So, originally, the series aired as simply Star Trek and the Animated Adventures of Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek. That's a bit much.
It's a bit much.
That's like Gene Roddenberry putting himself over a bit. He's all, "Okay, guys, I got..." How do you even title something? Can you imagine, Dave, you and I are working on a project and I'm like, "All right, Dave, you know, it was titled this, but now it's going to be called The Animated Adventures of Michael Flores. What is it about geniuses being a little too full of himself?
You got to have that ego to have a little bit of a genius.
You think so?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, like, that's what I've always been taught is, like, with genius comes a little ego because you know that you're that smart.
But David, also with great power comes great responsibility as well. And I don't think that's being responsible when you title something so douchey as the Animated Adventures of Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek.
And the funny part, and the funny and sad part of it is the fact that Gene Roddenberry was that type of person.
Yeah.
I mean,
listen, he can be whatever he wants. He is a super genius.
And he was a brilliant writer, and he knew it.
Yeah. He was good. Definitely had an imagination. So, of course, the series was created by Gene Roddenberry. It originally aired from 1973 to 1974 on NBC. It spanned 22 episodes over two seasons. And many people aren't aware, Dave, that this is considered the second series.
Yes, it is.
In the Star Trek franchise. Many people attribute that title to The Next Generation.
The Next Generation.
But it is not. And you'd be surprised how many Star Trek fans... And I'm not weighing your worth as a Star Trek fan by saying this. Not going to do that during today's discussion. Maybe another show. But today will not weigh your worth as a Star Trek fan. That's not my goal. My mother is a huge Star Trek fan, David. Huge. She has no idea about this. She loves the movies, loves the TV shows, watches them all the time. And I brought up the animated series to her, and she was like, what? What's that?
Because, unfortunately, this was made during a time when we talk about how a lot of animation is seen with a stigma that it's a cartoon.
Yeah.
And unfortunately,
especially in the 70s.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this has that stigma that it was made for kids back in the 70s. And well, but the amazing thing,
it wasn't specifically designed for kids. Now, there was, and there are conflicting reports, so you may be right, Dave, because there was originally some contractual issues where during the run of Star Trek, the original series, they were working on a spinoff series that was a cartoon, and the studio wanted Roddenberry to do a kids version, something that they can go after the younger demo. And that never came about because of arguments between the studio, and there was a war that was brewing between Roddenberry and the studio.
Yes.
So that never happened. So when the original series went kaput and the popularity started increasing for the reruns, the syndication, then they presented this idea again, this concept for an animated series, and it was supposed to be not just for kids. It was supposed to be for both. It was designed to appeal to both young and adults as well. So
the cool thing about this whole thing was the fact that I found out this doing my research behind the animated series. Do you realize that Star Trek, the animated series, is the first Star Trek series to get an Emmy?
I know. Isn't that amazing?
Compared to Star Trek, the original series, TNG, Deep Space Nine, all of them, this one got the Emmy.
And that's why it's a travesty that this is where it gets really strange. Even though this is considered, again, an official series, it won a fucking Emmy, it's not regarded as canon.
Yeah.
And some may dispute that, but the proof is within the subsequent 5 years after. The writers of Trek seldom adhere to moments within the series, except as a source of reference. So we've seen retcons glaring at us in the face when we're watching episodes of Star Trek, whether it be Deep Space Nine, the movies, Discovery, if you want to move even closer to contemporary times. But, and again, many, and I'm one of them, I will say I believe this series should have been canon, or at least remained canon, because for a time it was in fact considered canon. The writers of the animated series used the same writer's guide for the live action, the series Bible is what it's called. The writers of the animated series used essentially the same reference for the live action Star Trek original series.
Yeah.
So whether you want to argue it's canon or not, many aspects of the animated series have found its way back into canon.
Into canon.
By way of references used in later Trek series. And I know that Roddenberry is the one to blame for this not being canon. He had been adamant about not wanting it included.
Yes.
I believe around the time that TNG hit the airwaves. But in defiance to Roddenberry, the writers, it seems like many of the writers, when I was going through the history of the animated series, I learned something about Roddenberry that I never really noticed before. Okay. He didn't really have a good relationship with a lot of people.
No, he did not.
A lot of people seemed to just be put off by him. And it's strange because they all loved his work.
But as a person.
It seemed like they all butt heads with him.
Yeah.
To this day, you see a lot of these people throughout the run of TNG, even after he died, you see writers continually pulling things from the decanonized animated series and then being brought back. That's why I say you can kind of look at this as the animated series now. Yes, it's not canon necessarily, but you can kind of look at it as a reference or even an index because it seems like every writer that writes Star Trek is very well aware of the animated series. And they continue to go back to it and pull it, even as recent as Star Trek Discovery, when they had the reference, they referenced Spock in the animated series. I believe the Alice in the Wonderland story.
Yes.
Well, am I right? Yep. Is that what it was?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And like the thing about like the animated series, like I understand why Gene Roddenberry didn't like the animated series. It was actually more or less controlled by other people. It wasn't his original idea. A lot of people say that, oh, Roddenberry saw the animated series as kind of like, It was writing on his coattails and everything else. But the thing that I remember, especially with the animated series that drew me in, was the original cast was very passionate about being in part of the animated show.
Well, it seemed like everybody was passionate about it, but yeah. Roddenberry. But Dave, see, you say that he didn't have complete creative control, but according to numerous contracts that you can find online, people that worked with Roddenberry at the time, they all say that he had complete creative control. And that's why they find it odd that he wanted to decanonize it, yeah, because it was all him. In fact, one of his writers was reported as saying, well, he wrote it. I don't know why he wants to pretend it doesn't exist. I mean, I
think that was DC Fontana. I think DC Fontana, because DC Fontana was the original script editor.
Okay. Yeah. So the animated series was considered canon for 15 years after it aired. And as we had said, it was only after the first season of The Next Generation that Roddenberry was like, all right, well, now here's my chance. And I kind of understand, not because it's bad. I think the animated series is amazing.
Oh, I think it's amazing.
It's fucking smart as hell. It belongs in the Star Trek archives as canon, in my opinion. But also looking at it from the perspective of a creator. The artist is never done with his work until someone rips it away from him. It's true.
It's true.
I've spoken to various showrunners, and a few of them have said, listen, you know, because I've asked them, hey, when do you know you're done with the edit and you're just, it needs to go to be broadcast? He's all, well, you never know. He's all, but there's a moment where you're just like, I have to be done. Because if I was given limitless time, it would never be finished. I would continue to sit there and piddle around with the edit. And same thing with my script. When they're like, hey, we need the, you know, episode 3 written, needs to be produced. They're like, all right, almost done. And if they never said, hey, this is the deadline, I would be sitting here to this day writing it. So looking at it from a creator standpoint, I can kind of see where Roddenberry's coming from. He probably looks back and says, you know what? The technology in the 60s and the animation technology in the 70s, you know what? I could do better. Well, see, I could do better, especially when you see how different TNG looks aesthetically. I can understand why he might want to get rid of it.
That's the one thing that actually baffles me, is because when you take a look at the animation compared to where the original series was, right? What the animation allowed Gene Roddenberry to do was actually tell stories that were not limited. Because if you think about it, animation means all the special effects that he had to pull off in the original series.
Yeah.
That he couldn't pull off.
There's things that he can now do.
I
mean, look at episode 1 with that
the ship
creature. Holy the shit.
Ship, dude, that ship. Oh, if that ship was made today, I know it could be made today.
Well, look at, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, let's not talk about it. That's a little teaser for
no, I'll when we talk, bring it up. Card episode where the flower
Mike,
plants.
Mike, now remember, we're not supposed to bring up bad things.
Look at that flower plant, that flower spaceship they used.
Yeah.
That was cool. They could totally do something now. So you are right. Like, there's things you can do in cartoons that you just, especially at that time.
I
mean, look at the character Eriks. I believe that's how you pronounce his name. He's an Edosian, I want to say, alien species.
Yeah. And he was like one of the first alien species we ever get introduced to.
That's why I like the animated series, because number one, I've always liked this character for some reason. I don't know if it's just because he's unique. He fits a branding of Star Trek that a lot of science fiction kind of veered away from. And even later seasons of like Deep Space Nine and Enterprise, they got really comfortable with all the humanoid aliens. Like, oh, look, we'll just put a little tiny ridge above his eye. And oh, he's an alien.
He's an alien.
Oh, look, he looks like a human. No. Look, he has a little tiny ridge above his forehead. Oh, I thought that was just the shadow, you know, the light casting a shadow. No, that's a ridge. He's an alien. You know, whereas this, like, it felt like you have a real alien that's a part of the crew, something that you just could not do at that time. Definitely not in the 60s.
And do you realize that was a happy accident, too, because...
Oh, was it?
Yeah, because it was... at the time, remember, they tried to get the original... I remember the story behind this was the original cast was going to be the whole cast from the original series. Well, the production company that was covering and producing the animated series couldn't afford all of the cast. And so the one character that got cut out of the original cast was Walter Koenig's character, Chekhov.
That's messed up.
And that's why we don't see.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah, that's why we don't see Chekhov in the animated series. But because they had to do that,
you got Eriks.
You got Eriks, yeah, to fill in the role. And I was like going, even though it sucked that we didn't get Chekhov in the animated series. We still got they still use that opportunity to do something different.
I'm hoping we get some Eriks then in the year 5 comic we're reading right now.
I do too. I think that he's one of those characters that they should really bring back, because it's amazing to me that everyone, don't get me wrong, I love Saru.
Oh,
One of my favorite characters right now.
Yeah, he's awesome.
But when people say, oh, he's one of the first alien species in the of the original series, and it shows that no one pays attention.
Original series, what are you talking about?
Well, there's a lot of fans that feel that Saru is the first major alien character we ever have.
What about Worf?
No, what I mean is like in that pedestal of right there,
like the oddities his body
and stuff.
Yeah, okay,
everyone forgets about like the animated series and Eriks. Which is sad, because if they were to actually do Eriks today,
it's only a matter of time, right?
They would absolutely be able to do that.
Yeah. All right, so at the end of the first season of Star Trek, The Next Generation, this is where all of this decanonization happened. All licenses for Star Trek spinoff fiction were renegotiated, and the animated series was essentially decanonized, so that's when it happened, by Gene Roddenberry's office. Writers of novels, comics, and role-playing games were prohibited from using concepts from the animated series in their works.
Yep.
So he wanted to bury this. He did not want this to exist. I would love to know what was going on in his mind. Why was he so adamantly against something that was so good?
That was actually really good.
Among the facts established within the animated series, there were called into question by the official canon issue was its identification of Robert April as the first captain of the USS Enterprise in the episode The Counter Clock Incident. So David Gerald, who contributed two stories in the animated series, stated in an interview his views on the canon issue. Arguments about canon are silly. I always felt that Star Trek, the animated series, was part of Star Trek because Gene Roddenberry accepted the paycheck for it and put his name on the credits.
That's true.
See, and there's that thing I was talking about at the top of the show. It seems like a lot of people just didn't like good old Gene.
Yep.
He says, and DC Fontana, this is what you were saying, and all the other writers involved busted their butts to make it the best Star Trek they could. But this whole business of canon really originated with Gene's errand boy. Gene liked giving people titles instead of raises. So the errand boy got named Archivist, and apparently it went to his head. Gene handed him the responsibility of answering all fan questions, silly or otherwise, and he apparently let that go to his head.
Then we need to kill the errand boy.
Yeah, the Archivist.
The Archivist.
Wow. Yeah, because apparently there were some creative differences, as you mentioned. Roddenberry felt strongly about the changes that were made in the animated series, and his Archivist felt the same. And this became a bone of contention that was never resolved. And then with Roddenberry's death, it just kind of put the nail in the coffin for the animated series. But as of June 2007, this is why it brings up this debate again, because Roddenberry died, right?
Yes.
Everyone said, well, based on contracts, and he died and his estate isn't going to change it since it's his wish, right? No, the animated series will not ever be brought back to canon, but apparently something changed, whether it's his estate and they have the ability to change this or not. But as of 2007, the animated series was re-added to StarTrek.com. And a lot of people felt that this was implying that it is now considered canon once again. So in short, it seems to depend on what you would prefer. Gene Roddenberry's wishes before he died, what the studios seem to be leaning towards, or the middle ground that Memory Alpha has chosen, which is the fan wiki, essentially.
The fan wiki.
Which is, it's kind of canon. And honestly, I want it to be canon, and I think of it as canon only because it's become a reference and an index of sorts. It seems like every writing room has included it within the Star Trek writing Bible.
Yeah.
And they pull from it, just like they pull aspects from the original series and TNG and Deep Space Nine and Voyager and Enterprise when they need to. They also pull from the animated series. So I think because of that, many of these elements are now becoming recanonized just because of the usage. It's been allowed to be used as a reference. And because of that, it's just organically finding itself back into canon.
Well, not only that, Gene Roddenberry, yes, is the creator of Star Trek. He's basically, you know, the I guess you could say the god of Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing is like, there were other people that actually made Star Trek the way it was, whether it was not just Gene, but also DC Fontana and David Gerold. And those people put a lot of time and effort into the animated series, as well as the original cast. A lot of people don't realize this, but just like what I mentioned, Chekhov was cut out of the series, but Walter Koenig still was able to actually pen his own episode.
Yeah.
And a lot of the original cast had a say in what was happening in the original in the animated series. So in essence, yes, Gene Roddenberry wrote the stories and everything, but at that point, Star Trek started becoming more than just Gene Roddenberry.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens when you have a franchise. It's very hard to write everything on your own. And if you're going to write a TV show, if you're going to write a movie, you have to have writers you trust. And it seems like Roddenberry kind of went with the flow at times, but then he also seemed like he hated it at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So who knows? I mean, it would be interesting to see something entirely his with no other voices, but it might suck. Sometimes these geniuses need people to rein them in. That their ideas are fantastic, but hey, you know what? You can't really do that, bro. That doesn't really work. How about we do this instead?
Exactly.
There's a lot of creators that are like that. Now, this is a bit of a side note here, and I want to know if you had ever heard of this rumor before, because I don't think I have ever heard this. Apparently, there are several mentions that Roddenberry had thought for a while that all of the original series should also be decanonized.
No, that was true. That was true. That's actually
after TNG started, apparently. Yes.
After TNG started.
I've never heard that before.
Oh, yeah. It was. I remember reading it in one of his biographies that was released and everything. And then he literally felt that the next generation should have put away the original series. The original series would never be brought up ever again. And when you think about it, it kind of started
That would have been a sad day.
It made sense because, like, the next generation was I remember the reception of Next Generation was a lot of Star Trek fans were like going, this is so different than the original series. The tech was different.
Yep.
Suddenly,
the aesthetic very different.
The feel was different because you got to remember.
But also, it was way in the future, too. So it was digestible. You can understand why.
Yeah. But you can also, the one thing that basically people started noticing was we started getting more. With TNG, you start getting more character drama, right? You start getting more of those stories centered around, you know, a character's background or a character's, you know, political interests, stuff like that. While in the original series, you got that little of that, but it more or less focused on fun adventures, going out and exploring.
Right, yeah.
TNG basically decided, hey, no, let's explore like what me and you said. I have stated in a lot of other episodes, Star Trek is about journeying inward, looking at yourself, looking at what makes us human.
Well, exploration doesn't always mean the tangible obvious.
Obvious, yes.
The exploration of the human mind, the exploration of philosophical thought, the exploration of understanding human nature. I mean, these are all ways that Star Trek used that theme of exploration. It's not always like, hey, let's go to a planet and explore.
And like,
I think there are some fans that think that. Like, they think that's what Star Trek should be.
It should be.
Let's go to new planets every week and see some new monsters.
I want
to
see green women.
Can we please bring back the salt monster? That bitch was hot. I don't care what anybody says. You could suck the salt out of my penis.
But in.
Please.
In the biography
don't skip past that joke. That's a good one.
But in the biography that I read, Gene Roddenberry literally said, I believe that basically that stuff should be forgotten.
That's too bad.
And it's really sad.
It kind of disappoints me a little bit because I love the original series so much and I love the animated series so much. And to think that the creator hated it that much that he was like, fuck it. I mean, what about the motion picture? Was that going to be included too, or just the original series?
Exactly. I mean, what about the movies?
Did he want to include all of Captain Kirk? I mean, come on, the motion picture, The Wrath of Khan, Star Trek III, I believe even Star Trek IV, all came out before Next Generation. You want to retcon all of that goodness? Come on. I'm glad he didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, the animated series, as you mentioned, Dave, was the first Star Trek to win an Emmy. And you want to pretend it didn't exist? So let's move into this bit here. Let's switch gears. How did the series come about? And we had alluded to this at the top of the show briefly.
This was an interesting origin.
The live action show proved very popular in syndication after its cancellation, which happened June 3rd, 1969. Now, I remember this very specifically because, again, I'm from a household that loves Star Trek, grew up watching Star Trek, and my mom shared this thought with me that it just wasn't very popular until after the lunar landing on July 20th, 1969, because people's idea of science fiction changed. Suddenly, the fictitious world of Star Trek became that much more appealing because of what happened. When you think about it, we landed on the effing moon. Space exploration became a real thing. So suddenly people's excitement went through the roof and there was a resurgence that resulted in Roddenberry's decision to continue the series in an animated form. So lucky for us, much of the original cast returned, as you had said, to provide the voice talents. The writers characterized the animated series as effectively the fourth season of Star Trek.
Yes.
But if we never landed on the moon, Dave, never mind that giant leap. What's the phrase?
One small step for mankind.
One giant leap for... Are we dumb? Did we forget the most epic of sayings? Never mind the moon landing and what it meant for humanity. But we got some Star Trek because of that moon landing. I just want to thank NASA. My hat's off to you for getting some boots on the moon soil so that we can get more Star Trek. That's all it takes, though, just for people to understand something. Sometimes you need to have an element to be grounded in reality for us to say, yeah, okay, that's interesting. It says something about our culture, honestly.
It does.
So the animated series was critically acclaimed and was the first Star Trek series to win an Emmy, as we said, when its second season won the 1975 Emmy for Outstanding Entertainment. But guess what it won for? And I just disagree with this.
Okay.
Outstanding Entertainment Children's Series.
But here's the thing, though. You got to understand that back in the 70s, cartoons were cartoons.
David, but this does not feel like a kid's show at all.
I understand that, too. I know. That's why this series was way before its time.
Right? Way before its time. And yes, there is that. For some reason, American audiences are way behind the times when it comes to animation. I mean, the Japanese culture was already viewing animation as primetime entertainment at this time. But
yes,
the United States, we were slow to find acceptance for animation as a form of viable entertainment for adults.
Well, think about like this too, because this was a bit of tidbit that I found out in my research that this says a lot about how cartoons were viewed back then. The fact that the initial proposal for the animated series was supposed to have an educational spin.
Right. That's what I was saying. Right? Yeah.
So get this, the original series was the original concept of the animated series was to show the original series cast train a teenage crew on a ship called Excalibur about space exploration.
Yeah.
And the three main characters was going to be a Vulcan named Steve, an African-American boy named Bob, and a Chinese boy named Stick.
Hold on. Go back. What was the name of the Chinese young man?
Stick.
And what was the African-American?
Bob.
And what was the other one?
Steve.
Yeah, okay.
Steve,
just wanted to
Bob
make sure people
Stick.
Heard that one more time.
So think about that. That was the initial pitch back in the 70s, and it was going to be cleared. And then, you know, we had the whole, what we already discussed about the drama, the relationship between Roddenberry and Paramount happened, and thankfully that did not get greenlit.
Yeah.
But back then, that's what cartoons were seen like. They were seen for kids for educational purposes.
But I popped on the first episode because, again, it's been a while since I have watched the animated series. And now that it's available on the CBS All Access app with all the rest of the Star Trek series, I have been going back and watching it. And I popped on the first episode to prepare for this discussion, and I was blown away.
Yeah, same here.
I'm like, this is so good.
I was really worried I was going to get like nostalgia glasses.
Yes, and Dave, I told you that when we were preparing for this. I'm like, I'm afraid to watch this.
Yeah.
Because when I watched it long time ago, I loved it, and we all know how that panned out when it comes to Willow. That's always my go-to.
I still watch Willow.
As a kid, I loved Willow. And then they re-released it. I'm like, yes, fucking Willow. This is going to be the best night of my life.
Then you sat down and
I wanted to die.
I wanted to die. You are the greatest swordsman in the world.
Yeah. So I did not want the same thing to happen with the first episode or with the animated series here.
But honestly, when you watch that first episode, it's like, wait a minute. This feels more or less kind of like it was supposed to be an episode of Star Trek.
Yes. I mean, there was philosophy in it. There was exploration.
I mean, it was a well thought out episode.
I felt sorry for the villain.
Yeah.
I honestly, I was like going, just like any of those great moments in Star Trek when they do the really deep storytelling that DC Fontana is infamous for back then, where she would tackle, you know, moral dilemmas. This was a good, even though it was only like, what, 20 minutes long, 24 minutes long?
No, it's a full hour.
Is it a full hour?
It didn't feel like it. I believe it was 40 minutes.
But like, but even
we'll
with that.
We'll get into that when we discuss the episode.
Even with that, you get like this really weird sense that, oh, wow, you sympathize for the villain in this. And yes, well, I don't want to get any deeper into it because there's a lot to go through in this for just this first episode.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, all of the series episodes, and I was not aware of this, and I feel myself becoming ashamed of myself as a Star Trek fan as I was doing research for this discussion. All of these series episodes were novelized.
Yes.
By none other than Alan Dean Foster. And it was released in 10 volumes.
Yep.
Under the Star Trek Logs banner.
Yep. And it's incredibly hard to find now. In relatively good condition, because like I had this collection a long time ago and I ended up selling it for quite a good penny to Star Trek fans because it's very difficult to actually get the original books.
I was already Googling. Yeah.
Your pocketbook was hurting, wasn't it?
Dude, if I can find a copy, I want to say there was a republish recently. Based on my search yesterday, but I could be wrong. I'll wait until our discussion on episode one to we'll revisit that once I have a chance to look into it. Now, initially, Foster adapted 3 episodes per book, but later editions saw the half-hour scripts expanded into full novel-length stories. Okay, so they were half-hour scripts. Why was I thinking it was an hour? It seemed very long.
It does, doesn't it? Because like even me, I was actually thinking, yeah, it does feel kind of, it feels very substantial for a animated series.
That's a good way of saying it. Substantial. Yeah. But I'm definitely going to need some copies of the stat. So if anybody out there knows where I can pick up some nice copies, I would love to get the half hour scripts that were expanded into full novel length stories.
Yeah.
I mean, Alan Dean Foster, I mean, forget it. I mean, he's amazing. As a writer, science fiction writer, so
he's one of the best. He's one of the best, and he's one of the, you know, like, I guess you could call him legends when it comes to.
Oh yeah, I would definitely call him that
to sci-fi writing.
At least an icon.
Yeah, an icon for sure. Icon's a better way of saying it.
Yeah. In the Star Trek animated series, a lot of other things kind of came forward. Things that we might even take for granted, which is pretty fucking cool. The title character was given the name James T. Kirk, right?
Yes.
But it was not until the animated series that writer David Gerrold expanded on the T, giving us Captain James Tiberius
Kirk. Yep.
So you could retcon all you want, Gene Roddenberry.
We're going to take stuff from it still.
Yeah. And it was purely coincidental that he chose Tiberius on Gene Roddenberry's first series, The Lieutenant. The principal character was William Tiberius Rice. According to Gerald, he had been influenced by I. Claudius and had approached Roddenberry with his choice of middle name. But it was not until 2014 that he learned of its earlier use. What? I don't understand that. Okay, yes. Yeah, I get it. Jesus, I'm an idiot. It's late. It's late right now.
It's a little late. It's a little late.
Yeah. The animated series reintroduced the three-armed, three-legged alien member of the bridge crew with a long neck named Eryx, as we had mentioned, and a cat-like alien crew member, which I forgot, named Imres.
Oh, we haven't gone to her yet. That's the thing. I don't think she made an appearance in the first episode.
No. But I did forget. She's actually in one of the books I'm reading by James Swallow.
Yeah.
That name is familiar, but it's not familiar in the animated series. So I must have forgotten quite a bit. So according to Roddenberry, which we had discussed, there were budget limitations, which have made it impossible for either alien species to appear in a live action series at the time. And that's the benefit of a cartoon, as we had said.
because he's able with a cartoon, you're able to just take it anywhere you want then.
Yeah, but I will say this, Dave. I will say this, and we'll get into this more when we discuss the first episode.
Okay.
But there are things that should be retconned, like the personal force field technology
known as
the life support belt.
The life support belt needs to stay.
That is the most awfulest thing I have ever seen.
Mike, why didn't they use life support belts in Discovery?
Oh, Jesus. A life support belt. Do you think they'll ever bring a version of that in?
Oh, dude, if they did, I would applaud them.
Have they ever brought a version of that in?
No, because like if you look at all the technology and Discovery, it's all suits.
Yeah.
It's all suits.
Well, okay, so in addition to supplying the wearer with the appropriate atmosphere, that's so cheap, and environmental protection, it permitted the animators to simply draw the belt at a yellow glow.
Yes.
Around the existing characters instead of having to redraw them with an environmental suit. That's pretty bad. Oh, wait a second. A version of the life support belt later appeared in an early Star Trek The Next Generation novel. Okay. All right.
That's what we... Oh, wait. I can't with Discovery.
I would have been ashamed of myself again because I know all the Star Trek episodes pretty damn good, all of them. And I do not remember a fucking life support belt.
No.
That's an awful idea, David. It would be funny to bring a I can see it working in Discovery since there's a bit of tongue-in-cheek humor sometimes. I could see them bringing it up and it not working and then kind of making a wink joke to the audience that knows of the life support belt.
Actually, I'll take it one better, Mike. I think they should bring the life support belt in the new Star Trek animated series that's coming out. Because remember, the Star Trek animated series is supposed to be a comedy.
Yeah, but that's not canon. So at least I don't think it's canon. And it would be funny.
It'd be funny.
But I would like someone to have the balls to bring this into canon just to make a joke about
it. Not
to actually see it or use it, because that's embarrassingly awful.
A glow. And that's the beautiful thing. It's kind of like, well, animation opened up opportunities. It's also brought up a couple of laziness.
Oh yeah, for sure. Now, Dave, we're not alone in liking this series. The Star Trek animated series was named the 96th best animated series by IGN. In 2019, CBR ranked all 31 seasons of Star Trek television shows, placing season one of the animated series as 23rd.
I wonder what was
and season two at 24th.
I wonder what was their lowest.
Wow. In 2016, in a listing that included each Star Trek films and TV series separately, the animated series was ranked 11th by the LA Times.
Because when you look back at the Star Trek series, I know we toss this around, this saying around, but it was before its time.
I think it
was not your normal cartoon.
It really was. And I think ultimately that's what it comes down to, is that Gene Roddenberry was a creative mind that was going to do whatever he can to get his story out. And yes, we can make some jokes and be cynical about the reasons behind why he did this. You know, like his former writing partner saying, well, Roddenberry accepted the check, you know, and kind of alluding to the fact that he was doing this for money, right? Okay, so be it. Roddenberry has a great mind. He created this world of Star Trek in such a way that it has continued to grow and thrive even after his death. There's a lot of creators that can't say that. There's a reason why Star Trek has remained so important to us as a culture, as a society, and not just, you know, the American culture, but the internationally, it has managed to hold on and make an impression on the peoples of Earth for a very good reason. And the animated series goes right in there with that. There are cutting edge stories. There are ballsy decisions, except for the fucking seatbelt that shows you why Star Trek has managed to hold on this long for 50 plus years. And the way I look at the animated series, it's an extension of the original series. And I'm right up there with the other writers that say that essentially they consider this the fourth season of Star Trek. I mean, there are many episodes that are actually considered sequel episodes.
Now I'll see this. When it comes to actually saying, oh, this was the fourth season.
Yeah.
Especially since we've been covering a certain comic.
That's year five, though. That's year five.
A lot of people have said that is the fourth season of Star Trek.
But it's year five, though.
But it's year five. So I'm willing to say, yeah, we could say that just like what you said.
I think we can have the anime series as the fourth.
We could have both. We can
have year five as the fifth.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure year five, how many issues in are we right now on year five? Five that we've covered?
Five, yes.
Or six?
No. It's five.
Okay. So either way, they have not as of yet pulled from the animated series, right? So the moment they do, we will know that the animated series, in the mind of the writers of year five, also view it as season four. If they don't pull from it, that means the events in the animated series have not happened yet. How do you like that?
Ah.
You like that?
I like that. That's a good idea.
So if they start pulling things from the animated series, then we'll know. Okay, well, it came first then. And listen, Dave, those writers in that room are amazing for year five. So,
oh, they are.
If they're going to do it, they're going to do it soon, and they're going to do it right. If they haven't already, again, we're behind right now. All right, Dave, so this does conclude our discussion on Star Trek, the animated series. We will be back, as we do plan to continue with detailed analysis and breakdowns of each and every single episode of the animated series until we're done. I'm not quite sure whether or not we're going to do it on the free feed. I'm going to leave it up to the listeners. If they are, in fact, interested in listening to us break down the animated series episode by episode, then I need to see some hands, some virtual hands raising on social media, letting us know, hey, yeah, I want to hear that on the free feed. Otherwise, it's going to go to Patreon, where I know the people will want to listen to it. And if you want to become a Patreon subscriber, where we continue to break down year five comic, among other things, books, topical discussions on the Maquis. In fact, we're starting a new series of discussions on Section 31 here in just a few days. If you want to pledge and subscribe and help our show grow, head over to patreon.com/rainmandigital and pledge $5 or more a month and gain access to a plethora of Star Trek discussions. David, any final things you want to say?
I was actually going to bring up the fact about looking up and seeing what in the world did they consider worse than Star Trek, the animated series.
What did they consider worse?
Well, okay, without going into full detail, the first thing that pops up, Star Trek TNG season one is the worst.
Wait a second.
Yes, they put that as the worst.
No. Oh, come on. I don't think I agree with that.
And then you know what follows it? Star Trek Voyager season one.
Okay, I might agree with that, because I do love me some Voyager, Dave, but season one was a little rocky.
But think about that.
It wasn't writing issues. It just wasn't that interesting. It wasn't badly written. But TNG, I don't remember TNG feeling season that way. One. You remember feeling that way about season one? Now, it's been years. Here's I love TNG, but it's been years since I've rewatched it, except for the episodes that we do rewatch for the purpose of discussions. I haven't rewatched TNG in about 4 years now, I think.
I'm trying to remember, like, what were the points of season one? I mean, it begins with, you know, Q showing up. Which, and then,
I mean, Encounter at Farpoint's
like fantastic.
Yeah.
But then after that, what can you actually remember from season one?
Tasha Yar has sex with Data. That's pretty hot.
That's pretty hot.
Come on, let's not forget that. How can you dare you, Dave?
I can't. I was really surprised. I looked up the list that you were talking about.
Tasha Yar was a smoke show. That's all I remember. All I remember is Tasha Yar and her yellow uniform.
The yellow uniform.
Wait, was it yellow she wore? Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Oh, she was so smoking hot. Yeah, I've been looking at an old cast.
She had that whole like defiant 80s look. You know, like I fucking hate you, dude. I'm going to punch you in your face.
I'm going to make love to you.
She looked like a rock. Didn't she look like a chick that belonged in like a rock star music video on MTV? Yeah,
she had that pixie cut type thing going.
Dude, please. Come here, Tasha Yar. Come here.
Come here.
All right, we better close out the show. I want to thank everyone for listening. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.